Good Morning Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
President did say he wants to do something with an executive order in relation to federal emergency response. He said he may reform or eliminate FEMA. Instead of sending emergency responders, he may start to send a percentage of money to states to take care of themselves. But, you know, FEMA has specialized expertise that some of these states just don't have.
Oh, Margaret, in their arsenal.
And how will states who are lower income states, the Mississippis, the Kentuckys, the Alabamas, be able to do this for themselves without federal help?
Well, the president, to be clear, is not saying we're going to leave anybody behind. He's saying that in the way that we administer these resources, some of which is coming from the federal level, some of which is coming from the state level, we've got to get the bureaucrats out of the way and get the aid to the people who need it most.
But these
Let's
are the
be
first
honest,
responders.
Margaret, you talk about the expertise from FEMA. FEMA in North Carolina, in California, in Florida with some of the hurricanes has often been a disaster.
I wouldn't call them first responders. I would call them second responders. The FEMA is not like the front line, I don't think. I thought it was very interesting. If you watch this interview, Margaret Brennan is, I don't know quite how to describe it, her face. She was so, at this moment when she's talking, but you know the small states, what are the small states going to do if you get rid of FEMA? It was such a weird here.
To take care of themselves. But, you know, FEMA has...
Here.
Instead of sending emergency responders, he may start to send a percentage of money to states to take care of themselves. But, you know, FEMA has specialized expertise that some of these states...
You know FEMA. And just the concern, the motherly, grandmotherly sort of scolding concern about the vice president supporting the president in this move. Now, I will say, I don't have a real strong opinion one way or the other about FEMA. You know, is it an effective or an ineffective agency? I know people do have strong opinions. There's some things I've seen. Like, for instance, remember last week the governor was talking a lot about how, or maybe the week before, I don't know, the governor was talking about how, you know, just block grant us the money, we'll take care of it, we know how to handle things in Florida. I'm sure that's true. And again, we're a large state, we have a lot of capability. Things I do know about FEMA, the years and years and years you have to wait for a lot of your compensation, or the way they definitely depend on, you know, local on the ground emergency managers. I don't know what FEMA would be able to do in a hurricane if it weren't for people like, you know, Eric Gilmore and, you know, Tom Lloyd, you know, like that's our local, I mean, each has slightly different positions now, but, you know, and Brad Baker, you know, if these people weren't working here, I don't know what they'd be able to do. Also, you know, some of the inefficiencies in the federal government running this is like you have these highly bureaucratic protocols for handling, for example, debris collection. You know, you literally have one dude driving a truck with a cherry picker or tree picker going along, picking up the limbs. And then you got, you know, somebody else that they hired to drive in the car behind them with the clipboard and the scanner to scan every load and verify that it's all the appropriate stuff, which I get is designed to prevent fraud. But there is a cost to preventing the fraud. And so you lose either way. Is that efficient? I don't know. Wayside Park, we're still waiting. You know, like, what? How many years has it been since Sally? And we have things that still, I mean, it's 2020, so, you know, it's been 4.5 years since Sally. And we have things that still have not been paid. And it's going to continue to be that way. So should it be remedied? Should it be reformed? I wouldn't call it a model of efficiency. Is it highly dysfunctional? Is it been a disaster? Well, in some cases, it hasn't done great. You look at, I mean, North Carolina, California. I mean, you see your examples.
And it's not because we don't have good people at FEMA. It's because bureaucratic red tape and garbage prevents the rapid deployment of resources
but
to the people who need it most.
But the states are now going to have to do this themselves?
The president is trying
to... Her face is so funny when she says, themselves? You can hit just the shock and disbelief.
Now going to have to do this themselves?
The president is trying to encourage us to reform the way that we deliver emergency response in a way that gets resources
so
to people
who need it. So don't take him literally. No, is what you're saying.
We should take the president at his word that FEMA needs desperate reform because it does. Margaret, when I went to North Carolina as VP-elect, but before we were sworn in, people would talk about how FEMA would get resources, food, medicine, water to a warehouse, but then would have no plan to get it from the warehouse to the people in the mountains who were literally starving and thirsting to death. Mm-hmm. We can do so much better, and under Donald Trump's leadership, we will.
But they work with the state and local officials.
They often don't work well enough. And again, that's not because
of the state and local officials?
No, the FEMA management officials don't work well enough with the state and local officials to get resources to the people who need it. We should expect, and this is, I think, one of the fundamental premises of President Trump's leadership, the American people should expect more of their government.
You know, it's kind of funny. My wife, who is often working on her own stuff while I'm watching these TV things, and she's like, I wish she'd just let him answer a question. Because she does have that habit of definitely interrupting him a lot. The interview also focused on birthright citizenship or the executive order that's currently on pause that directs the federal government not to recognize birthright citizenship for people who are here of undocumented parents.
A very basic principle in American immigration law that if you want to become an American citizen and you've done it the right way and the American people in their collective mm-hmm. wisdom have welcomed you into our national community, then you become a citizen. But temporary residents, people who come in here, whether legally or illegally, and don't plan to stay, yep. their children shouldn't become American citizens. I don't know any country that does that or why we would be different.
Well, this is a country founded by immigrants.
But this is a country founded by immigrants, you know. Don't you, Mr. Vice President, don't you know this is a country founded by immigrants? Like, you know when you ever, I don't know if you play cards, okay, but you're playing cards and somebody's like, this is a king. This king beats your cards. And you're like, yeah, but this is the eight of hearts. You know, your king doesn't count. The king of clubs doesn't count for much.
Children shouldn't become American citizens. I don't know any country that does that or why we would be different.
Well, this is a country founded by immigrants.
Well, this is a country
founded
by...
This is a unique country.
This is a very unique country, and it was founded by some immigrants and some settlers, but just because we were founded by immigrants doesn't mean that 240 years later that we have to have the dumbest immigration policy in the world.
That's a pretty good line, by the way. And he's right, you know. We do tend to think about it as everybody here came from somewhere else, except for the Native Americans. Although maybe they did too, right? You know, over a land bridge or whatever. But, you know, everybody's an immigrant in the United States. Well, I mean, if you define the concept of immigrant broadly enough, but if you define it in terms of people who are not political members of a nation leaving their nation to go to another nation that exists, then no. I mean, you know, the colonies weren't primarily settled by immigrants. The colonies were settled by colonists. You know, it's an interesting distinction, but it doesn't matter for much. But they go on.
No country says that temporary visitors, their children, will be given complete access to the benefits and blessings of American citizenship. America should actually look out for the interests of our citizens first. And that means, again, if you're here permanently mm-hmm. and lawfully, your kid becomes an American citizen. If you're not here permanently, if you're not subject to the jurisdiction of the United States yeah. and don't plan to be, why would we make those people's children American citizens permanently?
You know, that's going to be the question, right? And they're clearly wanting to test this case from about 100 years ago dealing with somebody who was allowed to be a citizen with the parents who were here legally. And, you know, that question is settled. Okay. The question, though, is whether somebody who is the child of parents who are here illegally is going to be a citizen. Also, it's interesting that he's kind of, you know, mixing these two things together, talking. And I mean, just because that's what the executive order said. But the idea on the one hand of people who were born here of long-term residents illegally here, long-term residents, people who are here temporarily illegally, and people who are here temporarily but legally who have kids. I mean, we actually have people who travel to the United States. Birth tourism is a real thing, that people come here around the time of their delivery for a month or two, and then they stay in, you know, these facilities, and then they have their child in order to get them citizenship. It's kind of a, you know, wild thing that that does happen, but that is a real thing. And basically his argument in this particular interview is these temporary residents should not be granted citizenship. I agree. Temporary residence for, you know, people who travel here just to become citizens is a weird thing to allow that to happen. People who are here illegally are not typically here temporarily. And so I'm not sure that that exactly applies to that. What is the current law? Well, you know, as I say, the current law is that anybody who basically gets born here, they are a citizen. Interestingly on this, you know, and Trump is trying to get the Supreme Court to set a precedent that would definitely change longstanding law and would be a different interpretation of the 14th Amendment, that bit about and subject to the jurisdiction thereof. That's going to be a really complicated argument, if only because both interpretations have problems. Because if you say, and subject to the jurisdiction thereof doesn't include people who are, you know, here illegally, well, they are subject to the, like, law enforcement can obviously arrest them and deport them. I mean, if you're going to say they're not subject to the jurisdiction thereof, then how do they have the ability to be arrested, detained, or deported? But if that's what you mean by somebody not being here legally, it both cuts too little and cuts too much. So I'm curious to see how this plays out. I suspect the Supreme Court is going to strike this down. I on Constitutional Matters, there's a couple of people that I pay a lot of attention to. Amy Howe at SCOTUS Blog is one. She's really good. Hugh Hewitt, who I've known a little bit for a long time, is another one. And he says, look, the reliance interest here is going to probably trump everything. Reliance interest is when you have a longstanding practice in the law that people have built their lives and behaviors around in all kinds of ways. You're going to kind of defer to that practice. It's, tradition, if you want to call it that. And it doesn't make the law, you know, what the law says or what the Constitution says different. But when the Supreme Court isn't sure what to do, you know, they're going to take reliance interests into account, basically. And given that this has had such a longstanding, clear interpretation, I agree with them, they're probably going to strike this down and say, no, Mr. President, what you need is a constitutional amendment, which is probably the right answer. So we'll see. You know, we'll see. These things, they're going to take a little while to play out. 437-1620, 437-1620. They also had a really good conversation about the January 6th pardon. There's a lot to be said about that. And if you hadn't been listening to the news or seen it or heard it, you know, in the last day, the Florida State Legislature and the governor are suddenly in a death match. They are at odds with each other. DeSantis called a special session. The legislature gaveled in for the special session, explained why the governor is a nitwit, and then gaveled out of the special session, only to gavel back in for a second special session that only deals with immigration, doesn't deal with condo reform or petition reform or any of the other three or four things that the governor also wanted to do, and then are advancing bills that will deal with immigration that they're calling the Trump Act, which are different from what the governor had wanted. And then the governor takes to X, Twitter, and has a rant about how there are a bunch of liars who don't want to do anything about immigration, and it's ridiculous that they're calling it the Trump Act, because it is definitely not a Trump Act. And then Danny Perez and Ben Albritton, the Speaker of the House and the President of the Senate, put out a letter that says, no, he's the poopy face. He is the one who's lying. What we're doing is really going to work. What he was doing was weak sauce. So now we have the race, and then DeSantis goes on like major national conservative talk shows yesterday trying to rally the troops against Ben Albritton and Danny Perez, saying, you know, kind of implying that they're rhinos and, you know, not serious about immigration, and I'm more Trumpier than thou. So that's where we're at this morning. we'll talk about that more later. But just so you know, mom and dad are fighting, and this is not fun. I'll give you my interpretation of how that's going to go. Meanwhile, vote in an hour and 37 minutes. Yeah, we have a special election today to decide who's going to be the new congressman. And it will be a congressman. Because there's no women running. Well, I guess there's Gabe Vallemont is going to run the Democratic. Okay. Well, who will be the congressman for nominee for the Republicans? Because there's 10 men. 10 white men, in case you didn't care, running for this nomination on the Republican side, and you get to vote today. By the way, Escambia County has had like double the early voting turnout of Santa Rosa County. It's weird. It's weird. So we'll see how that all turns. I mean, this is going to be a very small turnout election. The number of votes that it's going to take to win, I've been saying all along it's going to be close, and maybe a couple hundred votes wins it. You know, you're probably going to have somebody get like 18% of the vote and win. I mean, I don't know. Somebody might get 40. Who knows? I'm just saying it's incredibly plausible that somebody wins this primary with under 20% of the vote, since there's 10 of them. More likely that somebody wins it with like 25% of the vote, probably. Because I think there's like a tier one and tier two candidates. And the tier one candidates, there's like four or five of them that have really been spending a lot of money and doing their best to campaign. And then there's the other guys. And most likely it's going to be, you know, in the 20% range, maybe for those guys. Again, maybe somebody pulls 30 or 40%. I very seriously doubt anybody's going to get 50% in this election. But, you know, that's why you actually have elections, because, again, a few hundred votes is going to probably make the difference. 525 on News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay.
If you're living with dry age-related macular degeneration or dry AMD, you may be at risk for developing geographic atrophy or GA. GA can be unpredictable and progress rapidly, leading to irreversible vision loss. Now there's something you can do to
slow it down. Get it going slower.
Izervay is proven to slow GA progression.
Izervay.
Izervay or Avastin Captid Pagel is a prescription eye injection used to treat GA. Don't take it if you have an infection or active swelling in or around your eye. Izervay can cause eye infection, retinal detachment, or increased risk of wet AMD. Izervay may temporarily increase eye pressure. Your vision may be impaired after an eye injection or exam. Don't delay. Ask your doctor about Izervay today.
Izervay gets GA going slower.
Visit izervay.com. That's IZERVAY.com.
I'm Robert Bender, your supervisor of elections for Escambia County. The office of U.S. House of Representatives District 1 is open, and Governor DeSantis has called a special election to fill the vacancy. Please mark your calendars for these very important dates. The special Republican-only primary election is on January 28, 2025, and the special general election will be held on April 1st, 2025. For more information, go to EscambiaVotes.gov. That's EscambiaVotes.gov.
Ladies, do you want to feel more connected to our community? Consider joining Impact 100 Pensacola Bay Area, a women's philanthropic group that has awarded 165 grants totaling more than $17 million in our community. Connect with other women and increase your area impact. Membership deadline is March 1st. For details, check us out on Facebook or visit Impact100Pensacola.org.
In a world of payroll and HR services, things can get complicated. There are so many moving parts in business. At Avalon HR, we understand, and we have your back. Join us on the Pensacola Expert Panel as we guide you through the complicated world of payroll and HR services. Running a business is busy work. Allow Avalon HR to work with you. Join us tomorrow on the Pensacola Expert Panel at 10.
The Pensacola Expert Panel, 9 to 11 weekdays on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
Get the midday news live with Markley, Van Camp, and Robbins, 11 to 2, before Guy Benson on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
Puff, give. Puff, give.
So, my snowman made it to this morning, at least a little about 4 inches, little triangle of snow. I actually, my boys are often up in the morning because they play video games into the wee hours of night, and I actually went out and got it in my hand, and I went around to the boys and got them to touch it. So you touch the snow a week after the snowstorm, and my middle was like, I don't care, haven't touched snow, I'm not going to touch snow. Okay, all right, fair enough. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
See, that's a smart kid right there. I've had enough snow.
No, he doesn't care. He didn't go outside and play in it, didn't want to touch it, doesn't care. He's just kind of a little curmudgeonly right now.
Look, we are Florida people now, right? A federal judge is vacating an order that banned some January 6th defendants from Washington, D.C. Last week, the judge barred January 6th defendants that had their sentences commuted by President Trump from visiting the U.S. Capitol or D.C. without first receiving permission from the court. The Department of Justice responded by requesting that the restrictions be removed. The judge didn't remove them, but did acknowledge that they will not be enforced. President Trump signing a number of executive orders banning diversity-related programs in the military. As a result of that, any new diversity-related practices are now subject to an internal review by Secretary of Defense Pete Hegseth. And Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer continuing his push to lower egg prices, apparently, for millions of Americans. He was in New York yesterday, where he pledged to do everything he can to limit the effect of the bird flu that's caused egg prices to surge.
All right, David, thanks. Oh, by the way, I meant to give you credit for something. You know, yesterday was Holocaust Remembrance Day, and you had said something a couple times that you had said about Auschwitz being liberated by the Soviets.
Right.
And I realized in my head it was Americans who liberated all the concentration camps, you know, like Buchenwald. And I forgot that the Soviets had liberated Auschwitz, so I appreciate you reminding me of that partnership.
Fox News, I'm CJ Papa. President Trump signs a number of executive orders focusing on the U.S. military, Fox's Brooke Singman reports.
Bans DEI in the armed forces. It will remove race or sex-based preferences and promote meritocracy across the military. Another reinstates 8,000 service members who were discharged for refusing the COVID-19 vaccine.
Another is for officials to come up with a policy for transgender troops, and one is for the building of the American Iron Dome missile system. President Trump has another cabinet member in place.
The yeas are 68, the nays are 29. The confirmation is confirmed.
Well, the Senate gives the okay for Scott Bessent to become the Treasury Secretary, making him the highest-ranking LGBTQ official in the nation's history. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 5:31 at News Radio 92.3. It is partly cloudy this morning, 48 degrees in Pensacola today. And polls will be opening later this morning for the District 1 Republican primary election. Meanwhile, dates have also been announced for the primary for Joel Rudman's District 3 State House seat.
We will have a special primary on none other than April Fool's Day, the same day as we're doing the special general for Congressional District 1. And then that will be followed by a general election, if necessary, dependent upon who qualifies, on June 10th.
That is Santa Rosa County Supervisor of Elections, Tappy Villain, who says the announcement may have gone unnoticed as it was made last week, right in the middle of the big Florida blizzard. She said voters will have different ballots based on what they're eligible to vote on. That could vary based on political affiliation or where they live. Ballots will automatically include the races that each voter is eligible to cast a ballot in. Now, today, polls in the District 1 Republican primary open at 7 a.m. You can find your polling location online at votesantarosa.gov or escambiavotes.gov. Investigators in Santa Rosa County looking into a fatal shooting that started when family members couldn't get a hold of a victim, Alan Phillips.
We got a welfare check. The family of the man, the victim, kept trying to call, and he wouldn't answer, so they called his wife, who said, oh, he's busy. You know, she kept putting him off, and after a couple of days of putting him off, they called us. We went, did a forced entry on the home and found him, and he was deceased.
Sheriff Bob Johnson there, and he says when they started looking for the wife, Tequila Phillips, she was found in Wetumpka, Alabama. She's been arrested now and is awaiting extradition back here to Florida. An investigation continues in that case. President Trump is addressing House Republicans' annual policy retreat at his National Doral Resort just outside of Miami.
The past 7 days, my administration has been moving with urgency and historic speed to reverse every single disaster of the Biden administration. By the way, the guy was a disaster, okay? You know, we want to be nice.
Trump touted the work that his team has done since he took office, including saying that he's raised a lot of money for the next election that he assumes he can't use for himself. He credited the success during his 2024 election to TikTok, saying he became a little jaded towards the app, but now he will see what happens. Well, Gabby Petito's story is coming to Netflix with a docuseries on her death due out next month. It's called American Murder, Gabby Petito.
The happiest people on social media usually have the darkest skeletons in their closet.
I'd like to report a domestic dispute. Gentleman was slapping the girl.
Can you say that's a white van?
The Sarasota resident was killed in 2021 while on a cross-country van trip with her fiancé, Brian Laundrie. He ended up committing suicide and left behind a written confession that he had killed Petito. According to Netflix, the documentary will capture the reality of a young woman enmeshed in an abusive relationship behind closed doors. It's 5:35 at News Radio 92.3, and let's get a look at our Channel 3 weather forecast.
We will have some clouds in the area today with a high near 62 degrees. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping near 49 degrees. On Wednesday, partly sunny skies with a high near 67. Wednesday night, temperatures dropping near 53. On Thursday, mostly sunny skies with a high near 68 and a low near 61. Stay connected to Channel 3 News First Morning Weather Team. Download the WEAR-TV weather app. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Morning Weather Center.
And right now we've got 48 degrees in Pensacola and Milton, 49 in Gulf Breeze right now. Your next news at 6 and breaking news anytime it happens. I'm David Wayne, News Radio 92.3.
Hi, I'm Terrence A. Gross. As many of you know, I am a local board-certified personal injury lawyer, and I have practiced in this community for almost 40 years. Our law firm handles only people that have been injured due to the negligence of another. Join me this Wednesday at 10:30 on Pep Talk as we discuss all aspects of personal injury law.
The Pensacola Expert Panel, 9 to 11 weekdays on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
Serving overseas was just the beginning. We might be home from war, but our mission continues in communities all across the country. It's why we're out there in times of peace and crisis, providing meals to the hungry and supplies to the sick. It's why we're giving strength to those who are too weak and bringing resources to those without them. Service doesn't stop when we're done serving. It's what makes us the VFW. Learn more at vfw.org.
News Radio Pensacola has you covered no matter where you are or how you like to listen. Tune into our frequencies on 92.3 FM, 95.3 FM, and AM 1620 for the latest breaking news, local updates, and in-depth analysis. Can't be near a radio? No problem. Stream us live on our website or through our convenient app. Available for download on your mobile device. Plus, with our smart device integration, you can ask your virtual assistant to play News Radio 92.3 and we'll be right there with you. It's News Radio Pensacola.
Yeah, it's election day. Well, it's primary day. I guess it's the same thing. We have to staff elections. You know, they have to be out at the polls working all the volunteers. Tappy Villain, she is the supervisor of Santa Rosa County Elections. We had a chance to talk to her yesterday about both election day today and also this now overlapping primary for the House District 3 along with the general election of United States Congress District 1, which will happen on April Fool's Day of all things. Tappy, welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News.
Thanks, Andrew.
Yeah, welcome back. So you have been given an extra special gift this year, not only a special election for Congressional District 1 that is tomorrow, but now we have the dates announced for the Republican primary and the general election for Congressional District 3 in the State House of Representatives, vacated by Dr. Joel Rudman, right?
That is correct. We received that present on Tuesday when we were having the blizzard. So, yes, that announcement was made by the state. And so you are correct. We will have a special primary on none other than April Fool's Day, the same day as we're doing the special general for Congressional District 1. And then that will be followed by a general election, if necessary, dependent upon who qualifies, on June 10th.
So it's hard not to laugh at some of these things. And your comment was funny, that special gift. But also that it's on April Fool's Day is extra just entertaining on top of everything else. So I had actually called you, I think, on Friday or maybe, and I had asked you kind of how this is going to work because I was confused or just had questions. Because on the one hand, if you've got a general election going on April 1st, then everybody votes and everybody gets the same ballot. But if you also have a primary going on, then only Republicans get to vote, and they're going to have a different ballot, but you don't want to have two ballots. You're certainly not going to be running two separate. And it's also weird because it's not all of Santa Rosa County. It's only, you know, it's not the beachy parts. It's really in Alexandrade's District 2. Plus, then you're in Okaloosa County. How are you going to do this? It seems super complicated.
It does. When you first think about it, there was actually one of these very similar elections that was held in Palm Beach and Broward County a few years ago. And so it has been done, but basically what it will be, and there's some variables that you and I discussed the other day that we just don't know yet. And the biggest one is we don't know who's going to qualify.
Right.
But basically this election will be set up like a primary election. And so dependent upon who qualifies, that will be dependent upon how many ballot styles we have. And so, you know, historically in a primary, we have, you know, a Republican ballot style, a Democratic ballot style, and a nonpartisan ballot style. We could have those three ballot styles, but again, it's going to be dependent upon who qualifies February 3rd and 4th. So we will know more in the upcoming, I guess, week or two. And we'll definitely keep people posted. But that's how it will work. People won't get two different ballot styles. And as you said, there will be some voters that, because they're in a different House district, they won't be eligible at all.
Okay.
They will only be eligible for the congressional district.
Okay, so let me run through the scenarios, and you tell me if I'm thinking about this the right way. Somebody who lives on Navarre Beach, is no matter what party they're in, is going to get a ballot that only has the general election candidates for the congressional district 1 race. So far, so good?
That is correct.
Okay. Somebody who lives in Milton and is a Democrat, let's imagine... There's only one Democrat or no Democrats on the House District 3 side. That person is going to get a general election ballot, and that's all. It's just for the Congressional District 1, and that's all they're going to get on April 1st, correct?
That is correct. Okay. If there is either no candidates or one candidate, and they would go straight to the general.
Right,
you're
okay.
Correct. Yeah.
No party affiliation, same thing. Republican voting on April 1st that lives in Milton is going to get a ballot that has Congressional District 1, Republican, Democrat, write-in. Well, no, they're not included, but, you know, if there's an NPA, I don't think there are any NPAs. You tell me if I'm wrong. I forget.
There is one.
Oh, okay.
There is one for the congressional, yes.
Thank you. So Republican, Democrat, whoever wins tomorrow's primary, Republican, Democrat, and NPA, and then, of course, the option to write in, at the top of their ballot. Below that would be whoever qualified on the Republican side, and I think there's four at the moment, if I'm not mistaken, but as you say, we've got time for them to still qualify, will be on. So they'll get a ballot that's both a general and a primary ballot, and that's a single ballot. Is that right?
Correct. So okay. It will essentially be called a special election ballot at the top. Excuse me. And then as you go down the ballot, for if there's two different contests, and there'll be subheaders to say which one it is, if it's the special election ballot for Congressional District 1, and if that ballot is eligible to have the District 3 on there, it will be labeled as such.
And I guess there's a weird bit of, I don't know, maybe you didn't think about it, but there's a little bit of luck in the sense that there's nowhere that would have a D3 for the state house election that isn't also doing a congressional district one general at the same time. So you don't have that weird problem, right? So that's, I guess that's a nice thing. You know, a lot of this is actually solved. I knew if I asked a smart person, there'd be a good answer. I'm assuming that in this process, because the primary for the special election for District 3 is being held the same day as the general for congressional District 1, that's actually money savings of sorts, because you didn't have to have a separate primary and then a separate general. You have overlapping on the two elections, at least. Is that right?
That is correct. Yes. So there will be some savings there. Yep.
Good news. And then the other, but how much is it costing? Like, how much extra is it costing to have to do the CD1? And then how much extra now is it going to cost to do the District 3 as well? Do we know?
We really don't know yet. I have asked the commissioners for $300,000 to cover both the January 28th and the April 1 election.
Okay.
After January 28th and we get everything in, we'll see how everything's kind of shaken out. I imagine I will have to go back and ask for additional for the June 10th, assuming that we have candidates that, you know, qualify and would require a general election.
Okay.
But yeah, it's, you know, we're just kind of keeping an eye on it, and we shall see. But those are the amounts that I have, asked the commissioners for, and then also we have to report to the state what we are anticipating it to cost.
Okay. Oh, I did think of another scenario. Of course, you've already thought of this. It just dawned on me. If only Republicans have qualified for the primary on April 1st for District 3, and there are no write-ins and no NPAs and no Democrats, that would be the election, because it'd be an open primary and there'd be no general, and we'd solve some of these problems and everybody get the same ballot as long as they live in District 3. Is that right?
Correct.
Well, yes. Yay. Let's hope for that. Because that would definitely save money.
Stay tuned, Andrew. Stay tuned.
Right. Hey, I don't know if you know the answer to this, and you know, I apologize for not knowing. But if Joel Rudman, District 3, who resigned, that's the reason we're having the second special election. If he does not win the primary tomorrow, and therefore is not going to become the congressman, is he eligible to try again to be reelected to the seat that he resigned?
He would be eligible to try again.
Okay.
He would have to go through, you know, the same qualifying process as everyone else. But yes, there's nothing in statute that says he could not do that again.
Okay, I thought that was the case, but I just wanted to make sure and ask you. Last topic, which is maybe not necessarily one question, but tomorrow is the actual special election primary for Congressional District 1 for Republicans to vote. What do you want people to know? What might they not remember or realize? If the law has changed? I know the mail-in ballot thing is all done now because, you know, they would have had to early opt in for that because of the law, you know, sweeping out the names. But what do you want them to remember for tomorrow if they're planning to vote?
Yep. So as always on election day, you must go to the precinct where you live. And so that's probably the biggest question that we get every election day is, you know, somebody that may have voted by mail in the past or most recently early voting, because we had such an big early voting turnout, especially in November. And so they may not remember that. So they show up at places that are typically early voting sites thinking that is their election day precinct, or maybe they've moved since they voted last time. So just making sure they go to their precinct. If they're not sure where that is, they can always contact our office today or even tomorrow. Give us a call or go on our website, votesantarosa.gov, and we'll get them to the right place. But that's usually our biggest question on election day. Also, if people have requested that vote by mail ballot, they are due back in our office by 7 p.m. tomorrow night. I know with last week's interesting weather, there were a lot of things that were interrupted. Places were closed. Mail, was delayed. So if people have those ballots, they may just want to drop them off at one of our office locations, either our main office here in Milton or our annex office at the South Service Center down in Gulf Breeze, but making sure that we get that back by 7 p.m.
Yeah, my wife had the same exact question because she was like, oh, I don't want to mail this now. What do I do? You know, with the weather from last week, it was a real dicey thing.
And another little interesting thing about vote by mail, if I could just plug it real quick, is that if people make a vote by mail request right now for all of these special elections we're having, it will actually carry them all the way through the end of 2026.
Oh, okay.
So unless they specify different, unless they say, no, I just want it for this particular one. But if they typically vote by mail, that's how the method they want to use, they can go ahead and request that, and then they're good to go. And whatever comes our way, they will get, all the way through 2026.
Okay, good. So it'll be set for the entire 2-year cycle, basically, which is how the law is set up. And I assume that you're like tomorrow. It's all of the full precincts. Even though I don't expect you to make a projection on something like this. I know I am expecting to have very low turnout because it's a special election. It's a primary. There aren't not going to be many people most likely turn out tomorrow. But you have to have the same number of polling places open as if it were a presidential preference primary, and everybody's turning out, right?
Correct. Yep. All 41 of our precincts, we actually have 23 locations because many of them share a location.
Yeah.
But all of them will be open from 7 to 7 tomorrow.
And you're good on volunteers? You've got enough people to staff everything okay?
We are. Thankfully, people are excited to come back. They were surprised. They didn't think they would see us this quickly.
Yeah, exactly.
But, they're ready to go. We'll be setting everything up this afternoon and be ready for in the morning.
All right. Well, Tappy, thank you so much. Tappy Villain, Supervisor of Elections, Santa Rosa County. Thanks for the time. Thanks for explaining this to me when I was, as I said, a little bit confused with my questions in the beginning. I definitely appreciate that. And, thank you for running the election so effectively. I appreciate that we have good, clean, fair elections in Escambia and Santa Rosa County and complicated ones, at least in Santa Rosa County. Thanks so much for the time.
All right. Thanks, Andrew. Have a great day.
Yeah, in Escambia County, it's real simple. You just get to vote on the one issue because, Michelle Salzman didn't run for Congress, so the North End is fine. Alex Andrade didn't run for Congress, so the South End is fine, so all good. And if you live in the South End of Santa Rosa County and the waterfront areas of the South End, you also, it's real simple. It's just where Rudman's was the representative. That's where it's complicated. I still don't really understand why he resigned so early. Honestly, should have done what Jimmy Patronis did, which was make it effective April 1st. Because then he could have at least been through session and you would have had representation through session. That's really a mistake. I don't know. The costing money part is just a byproduct of the fact that it's a, that's a rule that we have in Florida, which, DeSantis was critical of that last week. And I agree with his criticism. I think the resign to run rule is really dumb. And it creates all these complications and it winds up costing us money and making us vote in these elections. But that's neither here nor there. I thought it was definitely a mistake to resign out of office so early that he could only file the bills that he says other people are going to take up and get them done, that they're not show for ad sake bills. It looked to me like they were, but when he was here in studio, he said that was not what they were. So, time will tell. Like many things, time will tell. 551 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. If you're thinking about buying or selling a home, you want to get the best price selling or buying, both ways, right? And you want somebody who understands the market and timing. Like, is January a good time to list a house as opposed to December or February or March? How does it work around the military shifting? How does it work around schools shifting? What about the change of the presidency? Has that been an issue? How are the markets adapting? Are the interest rates changing? And even like there's this sometimes idea like the housing market is a thing, but the housing market is a whole bunch of things. The $300,000 home and the $800,000 home in Gulf Breeze are not necessarily the same market. And the market in Gulf Breeze is not the same as the market in Cantonment or Pace. And those are things that matter because, you want to have a real estate agent who works with enough houses, with enough experience to really understand all of those kinds of differences. Christina Leavenworth and her team at Leavenrinke Realty last year sold 165 homes, the year before 175 homes. So they are very consistently plugging away at about 3.5 a week. And that's a level of experience and familiarity and knowledge that can only come from having that many homes sold. So if you want somebody who really knows the industry, knows the market and all the different markets that are going on right now, give her a call, 723-9158 for Christina Leavenworth and her team at Leavenrinke Realty.
When you have a good thing going, having two good things going is twice as nice. Bobby Likas Auto Service has been helping Pensacola service and repair their vehicles for years. Now Bobby Likas Auto Service has a second location at 8969 Pensacola Boulevard, right across from the Super Walmart. Same great service and reliable work. No matter if you're driving a truck, a luxury vehicle, or your family sedan, take it to the place thousands have done for years. Take it to Bobby Likas Auto Service, still on Davis Highway and now also on Pensacola Boulevard.
Tune in to Retire Right Radio, hosted by Roberts Wealth Management, Sundays at 1 with Paul Roberts. Find out how their certified advisors can help you enjoy your retirement income. Financial security is about more than investments. Roberts Wealth can help you live your values and trust your future planning every step of the way. Don't miss Retire Right Radio, hosted by Roberts Wealth Management, this Sunday at 1 p.m.
Investment advisory services offered by Foundations Investment Advisor Services, LLC, SEC. Registered advisors.
Hurricane season is here, and now is the time to make a plan and know your zone. In the case of an evacuation, have a plan to go to a hurricane shelter, hotel, or stay with a family or friends. If you're ordered to evacuate, you need to leave. You can rebuild your home, but you cannot rebuild your life. This hurricane season, know your zone. Know your home. Learn more at floridadisaster.org. This message is sponsored by the Florida Division of Emergency Management, the Florida Association of Broadcasters, and this radio station.
When breaking news hits, we're there to cover it. Fox News, WEAR-TV, News Radio team on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
Two things, okay? Shut up.
Good morning, 5:55 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. It is primary day, as you know, so get out and vote if you haven't already. Returns in Escambia County about double what they are so far in Santa Rosa County. I think Santa Rosa likes to be the day of voting, and Escambia likes to be the early. I haven't really looked at the Walton and the Okaloosa County to see, but this is one of those weird scenarios where, on the one hand, I think you might realize, hopefully, that your vote actually might make a difference in this election. I mean, somebody could win by five votes or one vote. It's really possible in this particular election because the turnout's going to be so low, most likely. On the other hand, I think a lot of people are like, I don't know who to vote for. I literally talked to somebody yesterday who said, you know, are you voting tomorrow? No. Well, why not? I don't know who to vote for. And I don't want my vote to offset somebody else who actually knows who to vote for. I'm like, yeah, but there's a lot of people who don't really know, and they're voting. So, but I get it. It's weird. You've got 10 candidates, and I don't probably get in trouble for saying it. I think there's not a clear, obvious one to vote for. Now, I don't come out, and I don't endorse, and I don't disendorse. But, you know, and we're going to talk more about this later. But, it's a weird field. For every candidate you've got, there are pluses and minuses. And it's not easy to be like, well, that's the person that should definitely be the one. And so, you know, it's interesting. It's going to be interesting to see what happens. You were going to say something?
I think a good resource is our podcast.
Yeah, well, we've interviewed 8 of the 10.
Right.
And we haven't gotten the last 2 in. It's not going to happen. I can't tell if they're actively campaigning or not, frankly. I tried to look up their contributions and spending, and they don't have federal reports at all. So, you know, the 5 or 6 that are really actively campaigning, we've talked to them. But the others, you know, we just, you know, did not manage to get them here in studio or, you know, on the phone. By the way, the ones who are actively campaigning, as far as I can tell, are Jimmy Petronas, Gene Valentino, Michael Dillon Thompson, Aaron Dimmick, Joel Rubman, Greg Merck, and then John Mills and Jeff Peacock, I don't think have really spent much money, but we've talked to them anyway. The ones who I have not seen actively campaigning, but I don't know everything. I may have missed it, or they may be campaigning more in their home areas of Okaloosa and Walton County, are Jeff Macy and Kevin Gaffney, because one's from Fort Walton, one's from Freeport. So, you know, they're not from here, which doesn't disqualify them. I'm just saying I haven't seen their stuff, and they didn't have a federal elections spend report file. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
Well, Vice President J.D. Vance says federal money to help hurricane recovery efforts in southwest Virginia could be arriving soon. Vance joined Virginia Governor Glenn Youngkin yesterday, talking with local leaders about their needs. This is 4 months now after flooding caused extensive damage in the area. Vance blaming the delay in federal funding on the Biden administration. The death toll from the devastating wildfires in Los Angeles now up to 29. Another death reported by Los Angeles County yesterday as a result of the Palisades fire. And there's a tuberculosis outbreak in Kansas City. It's now the largest documented outbreak in U.S. history. There's currently 70 people being treated for tuberculosis in that area.
In where?
Kansas City. Nearly 80 latent cases have been confirmed.
80 cases of TB in the United States in a particular location?
In Kansas City, yeah. The largest, it says the largest tuberculosis outbreak in U.S. history.
Don't you get vaccinated for TB as a kid?
I thought so.
Yeah. Wow, that's super weird. Okay.
I'm thinking it's Philly fans. They started it.
Gonna have to head out west for that dry
that's
air.
That's the scientific explanation you're gonna go with? I like that. All right, fair enough. What was the, you know, every year it seems like we get this same version of this map, which is the picture of the United States, and then it says, this is who everybody's voting for, or this is who everybody's rooting for in the Super Bowl, and the whole entire United States is gray, because they're rooting for both teams to lose, and then it's like, that area is voting for the Eagles, and you know, Missouri and Illinois are voting for the Chiefs. Missouri and Kansas are voting for the Chiefs. I was like, you wouldn't have Illinois voting for the Chiefs. Not ever. For any reason.